Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
Alrighty, folks, I don't know if you know this, but anytime you leave a comment on this channel, two people are guaranteed to read it. One is myself. I do not have a VA or anyone else doing that. And the other is this fine gentleman, Millennial Mike, because we do a show each week where we go through the spicy comments. We go through the comments that warrant deeper dive. And of course, Millennial Mike always tries to wind me up, and I'm trying to get better at not getting frustrated. So let's see how he does this week.
We got a bunch of good questions this week. Some really great conceptual would you rather. For everyone out there who was a fan of the would you rather game when you were a kid, we have some would you rather with bad things about the economy. We have some heat aimed at Mike, maybe some missed opportunities or mistakes that people say that he's made. But we're going to get started with a would you rather, and this is about the inflation versus a recession. It comes from Kyle Dorn, longtime follower of the channel, somebody who attended one of your events, the Vegas event. He says, new video idea. Would you rather have an inflation for a year or a recession for a year? Obviously, it can be tricky with how much and how bad, but figured it could give you something to rap about and may give the audience something to think about. So, Mike, would you rather have a year's worth of inflation or a year-long recession?
Well, I think Kyle is going. It's an important concept. So first and foremost, when I hear this question or I just start putting it together, I understand that recessions are part of the business cycle. I am not one of these people that think the Fed or the government or wherever could engineer an environment where we don't have business cycles. So, if I could wave a magic wand and we never have a recession again, that's not the reality I live in. I think Kyle is also asking about today. And it just feels like to me, we need a recession. I think there's, $8 trillion or whatever that was created. And that has caused a lot of misallocation of capital. That's really what a recession is boom cycles are 8 to 12 years. Recessions are 1 to 1.5, maybe 2. And they're just a way to punish bad investments. And frankly, I think it's the 12-year mark, if you don't take into account the little blip we had in February of 2020, we need a recession. There's a lot of bad investments. And we might be on the cusp of getting one. I think we've seen a Fed that's not going to cut rates anytime soon. I think Q2 will be a positive GDP print. But I think we're going to have one. So I am not one that sits here and thinks recessions are all these horrible, just horrible events. I think they're a cleansing mechanism. And as somebody who looks over the economy every day, I don't think it's unreasonable to say we need a cleansing. And the other thing is, if we just keep going on and maybe have a no landing and we just keep growing and growing, we will eventually have one. It'll be worse. I would rather have a shallow and short versus a long and deep. So in that context, I'll take a recession.
Interesting. Well, I think that does beg the next question, which Kyle sort of alluded to, which is it's hard to specify how long and how deep the recession might be. But obviously a recession typically means job loss, typically means lower GDP, typically means people might be foreclosed upon. And so I think a lot of people hear you say, hey, we need a recession. This is good. And it sounds almost insensitive. How does a recession help the average working man? Why should they want that? Why should they not just say, Mike, you're a rich guy. Nothing's going to affect you. Your opinion is incredibly insensitive to people like us.
Well, here, there's a couple of things in that concept. So just using your words, I don't think of myself this way, but you use them. The rich are the ones that are going to get punished in a recession. What happens in a recession? Asset values go down. So the rich are going to be hurt in a recession. So there's that concept. Second, when you opened that conversation, you said the average person. The average person is going to stay employed, Michael, right? We're currently at, 3.8% unemployment? The other way of saying that is we are 90, 94.2% or 96.2% employed. So I would argue the person is employed. So I think it's just about mindset. Yes. What I will give you, and I think where you were going, we'll have 1 million layoffs. We've had misallocation of capital. I mean, think about what Amazon and Microsoft and all these tech companies did, and Tesla, right? Tesla's going through what, 14,000 layoffs? They overhired. They took resources that could have been used elsewhere, maybe in small and medium-sized business. They had capital, so they overpaid. And now they're kind of putting it back in the market. It is messy. It is painful. This will be my fourth or fifth recession as an adult. They suck. They always suck. But I'll tell you the last thing. If you're an investor, do you want to buy at peak prices or do you want to buy at a discount? And when I mean buy, I don't mean real estate. It could be stocks. It could be Lamborghinis, like the orange Lamborghini that the lumberjack wants. It could be crypto. It could be whatever you want. If you are an elite investor, you should welcome a recession. Recessions are where wealth is made. So, you know, if you think what I said is insensitive, certainly wasn't intended that way, but you know, that's your opinion.
Well, we can move on to another topic that's related to this one, which is unemployment, as we were just talking about with people losing their jobs. And this is another versus. Mm-hmm. And this one comes from DSonicJ5672. He says he's hoping he makes a question of the week this week. And he says, what is the worst case scenario? Number one, stagflation, or number two, rising unemployment and bankruptcies at the same time as rising inflation. So what's worse for the economy?
Oh, stagflation. Stagflation is way worse. Way worse. I mean, because when you think about stagflation, what is it? It's below trend growth and very high unemployment. It's kind of the reason stagflation is worse is because the Fed's tools help one and hurt the other. It's like this terrible combination, right? You want to fix unemployment? Whack rates. Well, if you whack rates, we get, you know, the cap, you know, stuff goes up, inflation reignites. You want to fight inflation? Raise rates, then jobs go down. Stagflation is this really yucky thing that takes years to work through, years and years. And it's something we haven't experienced arguably since the 80s, late 70s, early 80s. It's much like, let's just say we had a repeat of the Great Recession, something like that, or the dot-com crash. We know how to, the Fed knows how to do that. You whack rates, you know, you wait 6, 9, 12 months, the economy comes roaring back. Stagflations of years of yuck. So in my opinion, stagflation is by far, it's not even close, worse.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, these are the doomsday scenarios and things that could potentially happen. All right. One more versus question. This one's a little off topic, but still on the topic of real estate. You have spent your entire real estate investing career investing in Fresno. Recently, you started moving into the Las Vegas market. You started documenting and filming the process of buying up Vegas. This question comes from Daniel G86. He says, Zuber, I'm curious, how do you think about the trade-off between expanding your portfolio in Fresno versus trying midterm furnished rentals in Vegas? So Mike, give us a little this or that breakdown as to what you're doing there.
That's a very good question. And my answer is unfortunately not a lot of logic. It's more of a heart or a mission. If I wanted to maximize my returns, I would definitely focus on continuing to do what's working in Fresno. I don't know. Unfortunately or fortunately, I for whatever reason, have this calling to see if we could do it again in a brand new market and possibly with brand new assets. And the reason I want to document it is buy and hold it, investing is not sexy. It's not made for TV. It's boring. The first 5 years suck. All that stuff that we all know. But I believe we could make learning the market sexy. So I'm spending 10 to 15 grand seeing if I can do it. And the reason this has a calling for me is you and I, and many people watch this, know that one rental at a time works. But unfortunately, to get more people to see it, maybe we have to show the process. I can't do that in Fresno. I've already got it on lock. I've already got it wired. Buying another apartment building in Fresno is whatever. It's not sexy. I think doing something new and trying to document it could be. So I am making an unwise financial decision because my heart tells me, you know, it may help thousands of people down the line. So heart over head, I guess, in this example.
Well, I think it's a good idea. You know, for the people who followed my channel for a while, they know that I started my channel before I ever owned any real estate whatsoever. Not one single piece. I was broke, recently divorced, and I wanted to document the process of getting started investing in real estate. And I've documented everything I've done to get to 27 rental units. And so I think people are very interested in the concept of, okay, Mike, well, you know, you started 20 plus years ago in a market that's completely different than today. It can't be done today. It's impossible. And they throw their hands up, they give up, and they say it ain't happening. And so to say, well, all right, tell you what, fine, I'll pick a new market, an incredibly competitive market, an incredibly difficult market to invest in, and I'll show you guys that you can make it happen if you're willing to put the work in. And here's the video proof to prove it. So I like it. I think it's a great idea. I think it'll be extremely entertaining. I'm looking forward to seeing those episodes. Let's move on to a little bit of heat. All right. This is a Zuber's missed opportunities. This one comes from Dave-RH1RY. He quotes you here. He says, "Didn't tap equity, so cash flow is stupid. I didn't need to, but I would next time." And then he continues on with his statement, which is, "This really says that you, Zuber, were short-sighted before, and you should have leveraged to the gills at 3 to 4%. Don't play like you think this was smart not to. Hell, I wish I'd leveraged harder myself." What do you think, Mike? Did you miss the opportunity back in 2020 through 2022 when rates were at 3 to 4%?
It's funny. So I remember that video. I remember that comment. And I've actually thought about this one for a while, so I'm glad you picked this one up. So kind of set the stage, right? We're in 2022. We're 4 years out of retirement. I spend about 9 months getting all of my multifamily and single family homes below 5% and a lot of it below 4% fixed 30 years. And cash flow explodes. Even we were already done and it exploded more. And I remember because the lumberjack and I talked about this. He did the same thing, except he did cash out refis and, you know, took out seven figures, which I could have done. At the time, I made the call because, you know, I wasn't interested in doubling our portfolio. I just wasn't. But I will agree with this commenter that, yeah, I think it was a mistake, because what I see coming now are opportunities in multifamily where that cash would have, that extra $1 million or $2 million or shoot $3 million would have been helpful. So yeah, it was a mistake. I do cringe at his comment about leverage to the gills. I would never do that. I mean, we're below 40% LTV today. I could have gone to 60 or 65% and been just fine. Cash flow still would have been good. But yeah, it, you know, in hindsight, I should have thought about it more. I just was comfortable taking month-long vacations in Asia and 3 weeks in Europe. And I wasn't really thinking about adding another 100 units. And maybe I should. So shame on me.
You know, it's funny. I remember we've been doing this video segment for a while. I can't remember when we very first started, but I've asked you questions before. What was next for you? Are you going to continue to buy more, or are you going to become the small and mighty real estate investor, maybe even just scale down and get hyper efficient? And you've said over the years that, you know, your goal has never been unit count. And right. So at least as somebody who listens to this comment and listens to your explanation now, if you have never had the goal of just continuing to grow forever and eventually into your own syndications and just scale up indefinitely, well, is it really a mistake? You already made it to where you wanted to be. Now, sure, when you look at it through the lens of, well, if I had more money, I could buy more now in this opportunity, but it's almost like hindsight or.
Yeah, kind of no, it's clear. It's absolutely hindsight. I am very comfortable with the decision I made. It's calling the decision I had a mistake is, I guess, intellectually honest, but let's be honest, either way is great. It's just that I look out into the future and I go, you know what? I might be able to buy apartments for cash from banks that are in trouble. And today I couldn't do that. But let's be clear. I feel very good. If I wanted to, I could raise private capital and do the same thing. So, but I just want to give the, I want to give the commenter credit. I think his, I don't know, frustration with the way I responded is, I think it's fair. I wouldn't have leveraged to the gills though. That was a little bit too far for me, but I could have leveraged more to his point. And I think he's right. So, you know, I admit when I'm wrong.
All right. Well, why don't we talk about the housing market? So this question comes from Punakar, and he says, when you say the housing market is broken or crashed, you made it ample clear you're talking about transactions, not price. I understand its impact on realtors, brokers, and even GDP, but can you remind us why should an average homeowner or investor care about transactions going back to their previous peak? Why is a previous peak in transactions considered normal? In fact, I think the market during the recent peak was abnormal. So you've said before that transactions need to get back to normal. He's saying that he thought that previous peak was abnormal. Why should it return to that?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think all of us would want an efficient housing market. An efficient housing market doesn't have 500,000 single family homes available, right? You got to have more inventory. And let's be clear. I never said it has to get back to the peak to be normal. I simply made the call in order to get back to normal, given last time it could take 16 years. I wasn't making a call that 6.6 was normal or good, or I don't make those declarations. It's a number to me. But I will say, if you're hoping for a healthy housing market where there's plenty of supply and demand, and you don't have to, you know, days on market aren't six, you'd want it to go higher. So I think more transactions means more choice. More transactions probably means pricing doesn't go up, because that's what most people miss. One of the reasons we're having prices rage is because we are having low transactions, which means nobody's selling. It's just a weird combination of things. So if you're somebody out there that wants the housing market to be more normal and not have 7-8% appreciation for years, you want more inventory, you want more transactions in a healthier market. It's kind of how the system works.
All right, well, sticking with the health of the housing market, this one comes from Mr. Artist 7777. He says, housing prices will come down slightly, but not drastically, until people stop paying ridiculously high prices for them. And the market won't be broken for years. That's just not true. Now, Mike, you've said that the Fed broke housing. It's going to be broken for a while. Do you think he's right about that? Is there any way that this would recover quicker?
I see no mathematical way to get there. I see no trends. The only thing is I don't know what he means by normal, right? When I read that question, my brain went to, okay, if we call, let's say the last peak, if we tie the two comments together, was 6.6 transactions. Let's say 5.6 is normal and healthy. And today we're at 4.1. So, if he calls normal 5.6, we're not getting back to 5.6 for years to come. I don't see it. And by years, let's put a number on it. We're talking four or five, best case. So if he thinks it's coming back quick, dude, make your call. You'll be a legend. I'll celebrate you, but don't just throw stones. Second, if you're talking about price, all right, make a call. Lots of you doomers out there have been making calls for years, and I've been right, you've been wrong. I mean, tell me what you mean by normal. I didn't understand. I just don't see how we get back to 5.6 million transactions, which, based on the comment, I'm assuming is normal. It's not going to be quick. It's just not.
Right. Well, time will tell. We'll be able to look back and have a conversation at one point and say, well, this is how long it actually took. Because I assume you and I will still be doing this years from
now. I would hope so. I would hope so. You might be on an island somewhere, but hopefully you'll have internet connection.
You know what? I'll always make time for you, buddy.
You're the man.
All right. Zuber, you've gone clickbait. Recently, you released a video. And the title of the video, I believe it's since been changed, and you've addressed this in Daily Financial News, but the title of the video now is "What If Emergency Fed Meeting Rates Raised 25 Basis Points?" And I think the original title was "Emergency Fed Meeting Rates Were Raised by 25 Basis Points." And this caused a little bit of heartburn in the comment section of that video. And I picked one of the comments. This one came from at acag/bomb/bomb 5235. He says, "Michael, I've been watching you for a few years now, and I think you're pretty good because your content is very realistic. That said, I'm getting increasingly frustrated with your clickbait titles, and it's just getting worse. It's making me reconsider subscribing to you. You're just as bad as the Doom Bros. So, Mike, are you just as bad as the Crash Bros? Was there too much clickbait? Tell us what happened."
Well, so let's address that video first, and then we'll address the trend on my channel, because I think they're very different. So that title came from a conversation I had with Anna Kelly, where we just had the mental exercise of, and if you listen to the video, the first minute we set it up. Okay, emergency Fed meeting. Fed goes up a quarter point. What happens? That was the entire conversation. We try to play the dominoes out. So I created that title. And then I went on about my life, and then the comment section blew up. And that comment and probably dozens more were right. That comment went too far, or the title went too far. It was not something I was comfortable with. I should have said, which the title says now, and I changed it that day. I changed it like 4 o'clock. So 9 hours later, it should have said, "What if Fed emergency meeting?" So I agree with that. It was clickbait. It wasn't intentional. But it was. I mean, the result was clickbait. So let's address that one. So the audience was right. I was wrong. I owned it the next day on the Daily Financial News. But you move on. Now let's talk about a trend on the titles. And shoot, we'll even go to the thumbnails. My job as a creator who's focused on creating great content, whose content hasn't changed for 5 years, I have to get new audiences to look at it. And it should be obvious to everyone who watches my stuff that the negative titles work more. I have actual evidence. I've been tracking it for months. So yes, I will generally take I will generally take a negative theme from that conversation, use some of those words in the titles so that I can show people what's actually happening. Now let's go to the final piece. I'm just like the doomers. I can't envision that being true. If you've actually watched more than 10 seconds of any of my videos, I'm insulted by that comment. It's just the game that I'm playing. Is in order to get more and more people to see what the value we have here, you got to get them to click on the video. And unfortunately, it's title and thumbnail. And yes, my title and thumbnails have gone more negative. Not all of them. Like, I just posted one today that talked about, yay, we made $800 on YouTube this week. But yeah, I mean, it's the game I've signed up for. And I tried to fight it for years. But, you know, you either play the game or you don't. So I'm definitely leaning that way. But back to that video. I was wrong. I fixed it. I owned it. I've apologized. I've now apologized twice. Move on.
Yeah, I understand the frustration with the YouTube algorithm and more just human psychology, because like you, I try not to go negative in my titles unless it happens to be a negative topic on my channel I'm talking about. But I do have to try to go shock and awe. You know, Recently I released a video that was about me. I filmed myself going through a hoarder house in the Gary, Indiana area. And so what's the thumbnail going to be? Well, it's going to be a picture of a disgusting house and me going, ew, this is a gross house. And what is the caption on the thumbnail? Hoarder house. And what does the title say? Crazy hoarder house walkthrough. Why? Because that's the shock and awe that people will click on. If I just type in abandoned rundown house walkthrough, that's significantly less enticing to somebody. Yeah. So is there dishonesty in my title? No, but am I trying to produce it to be the most eye-catching thing that I can so that people actually watch it? Absolutely. And so it gets to be a difficult line of Well, we don't want to over-sensationalize or be dishonest, but we do want to paint it in a light where people are actually going to be interested, because we're competing against millions of other creators out there. But I got to somehow stand out. So here's the crazy hoarder house I walked through in Gary, Indiana. Like, click it.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, and it's the game we sign up to play by being creators. And again, we're both motivated to help people. And you're not helping anybody if they don't watch your videos. So just the reality that we have to play with. But if anybody in my audience who are loyal followers see me go doomer, call me out. All of you, anybody who's got my cell phone number, text me. And if you don't have my cell number, you don't have a problem with me because you don't know me enough.
Or leave a comment on his videos or on his Instagram, because I will find it. I'll ask him. We'll hold him accountable. And absolutely, that's what I did when I went through that video. I mean, I couldn't get every comment there, but I picked one that encapsulated what some of the comments stated, and we addressed it.
And you should have.
Two more questions. And this one's an interesting conceptual question that I've heard people talk about, especially the doomers, a lot online. And that's about foreclosures and their ability to apparently heal housing or return us maybe to a better housing market. So this one comes from, and it's a little difficult to pronounce, Consia Soad. I'm sorry if I didn't say that right. He says, I just hope foreclosures start to go higher. That would heal the market. Mike, do you think that a rise in foreclosures would heal the housing market?
Well, again, just intellectually speaking, rising foreclosures would increase inventory. Increased inventory would lead to more transactions, and that would heal the housing market. So intellectually speaking, absolutely, that would work. Unfortunately, I think what's not understood in this comment is in order for foreclosures to increase, you need to go through the foreclosure process. And in today's world, that foreclosure process could take anywhere from 300 to 1,000 days. If you look at the Great Recession, there are plenty of cities where the average foreclosures were 3 or 4 years. So if we tie those two comments together, if you're banking on foreclosures fixing the housing market, congratulations, you're in 2027.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you also have to look at what the root cause of the foreclosures were. If we look at 2008, 9, 10, 11, we had unemployment at 10%, record high unemployment for that decade, that time frame. And so wonderful, foreclosures are occurring, inventory is coming onto the market, but nobody can buy it because nobody can get a loan because nobody has a job. So it's a bit of a trade-off there. It's oftentimes very difficult to get one without the other. All right, very last question. And this one is one that just got my blood pressure up, because I remember 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, coming into being an adult and reading the articles about how the millennial generation, the me generation, the most selfish generation, it was just bash, bash, bash on young people. And now I have to sit back and watch these articles about how Gen Z is winning. And the glazing of Gen Z after we just got roasted and flamed for years seems a little unfair. So this question came from G-Inro495. He says, interesting that Gen Z has a higher home ownership rate at age 19 to 25 than the previous two generations. And that's true. Gen Z is beating Gen X, you, and millennials, me. But why do you think Gen Z is doing so much better than Gen X or millennials?
Well, I think it's very, you have to be experienced. You have to understand specifically millennials. Millennials came of age, that 19 to 25, during the Great Recession. It was horrible. And you got to remember, a lot of these folks were graduating college and they had to go get fast food jobs. So frankly, Gen Z, which now has become alive during the greatest bull market in history, that's kind of like it's just like apples. It's not even apples and oranges. It's like apples and, you know, tanks. It's not even a fair comparison, but it is factually correct. But the reality is, one of you came of age in a bull market, and one of you came of age in a bear market. It's not even a fair comparison. That said, if you want to feel good for the millennials, millennials are about to be the wealthiest generation ever. Millennials will be the wealthiest generation ever. It will go baby boomers right to millennials. It'll skip my generation. Gen X, sorry, not happening. Millennials would be the wealthiest generation and not too distant future.
Well, we've got you beaten numbers, which is probably why the millennial generation is actually bigger than the boomer generation, which most people don't know.
Correct.
And while we're talking about generations, why don't we throw a little shade towards the boomers? Neither you nor I. Because I have this theory, and my theory is that the boomers who have been in political power for a very long time, I mean, look at the president, been in politics for 50 years. And who's his opposition? Another boomer. We've got candidates in the Senate. We've got candidates in Congress. We've got Supreme Court justices in the last few years who have all had serious medical conditions to the point where people are like, at what point do we start term limits for these people? I mean, it just seems ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I have a theory that boomers are not going to be remembered kindly by history. I think that they're going to be seen as a generation who kicked the can down the road at every opportunity to the younger generations and left us for the first time ever with an economy worse than the one they inherited. And that's my theory. I want to know what you think about it. I'm going to write the history book on them. They don't get to write it on themselves. So what do you think about my generation looking at what they've done?
That's interesting. So if you look at it from just a financial kind of U.S. economy, you're absolutely right. You know, the deficit. And these guys, I mean, these folks over 80 years old making decisions that we're going to have to pay for, that's just crap. So if that's your lens, absolutely. But you also got to remember when baby boomers were your age, you know, they could have been fighting a world war, right? We should be very thankful for. Actually, I guess it's not a world war. I guess Vietnam. I guess I'm aging myself too much. So it's more like Vietnam.
Right.
I don't know. But, you know, there was some stuff. That's an itch. I had not thought about that. How would I look at the baby boom generation? I guess, again, we don't prep for these. So it's just totally off the top of my head. I think the baby boom generation is going to be like every other generation but they did stick around a lot longer in power. Your point about Congress and the presidents and Supreme Court, there should be age limits, if not term limits. I mean, this is wild that we've got 80-year-olds making decisions that, you know, 30-year-olds are going to have to pay for. That doesn't feel good to me. So your point is valid. I don't know. I guess I never thought about it.
It's a very rare occurrence when I get Mike Zuber on the spot without an immediate answer. So I cheated because I went slightly politics instead of just economy. But hey, you're welcome for the treat, guys. Hopefully you liked that.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know. What do you think? Leave the comments below. Do you think baby boomers will be remembered fondly or not? Let's see what the comments have to say.
Perfect. Mike, those are all the questions that I have for you today. Appreciate everybody for watching. Thanks always for having me on the show.
Man, you're amazing. Again, where can people find you and see this hoarder house? What is the channel? Where can they go?
Millennial Mike on Instagram or YouTube. I have a bunch of videos about how to invest at a distance. I am the king of Gary, Indiana, and that hoarder house was in Gary, Indiana. So if you want to see more about that, just follow me there.
There you go. Thank you so much.